Okay, I'd like to call the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect it. It is Thursday, May 8, 2025. It's currently 3:30 in the afternoon, and we are in the Belts Committee Room in Juneau, Alaska. Present today are Vice Chair Senator Bjorkman, Senator Yunt, Senator Wilikowski. Senator Gray Jackson will be here. She's presenting a bill in another committee. Myself, Chair Kawasaki, we do have a quorum to conduct business. I'd like to thank Carrie Tupoa from Senate Records for being here today and Susan Quigley, moderator with the Legislative Information Office. Today we have a big agenda, but we will move very quickly. We have a second hearing on Senate Bill 152, the Harold S. Malka Airport at Ruby, and that is sponsored by Senator Cronk. We have a third hearing on Senate Bill 104, Vehicle Boats Transfer on Death Title. That's by myself. Third hearing on Senate Bill 121, Accounting, Practice, Privilege, and Audit. That is sponsored by Representative Shragi. We also have a first hearing on House Bill 75, Permanent Fund Employment and Eligibility. It is a companion to Senate Bill 77 that we had previously heard in this committee. We've had a first hearing on Senate Bill 166, the Notice Requirements for State Actions, sponsored by Senator Kaufman. And first hearing on Senate Bill 177, State Agency Publications by the governor, or by rules, by request of the governor's office. So we will, without any further, we will go ahead and take up Senate Bill 152. Senate Bill 152 is the Harold S. Malka Airport at Ruby, sponsored by Senator Mike Cronk. We appreciate you and your staff, Paul Menke, for being here today. If you want to just summarize the bill, we'd be happy to hear it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Mike Cronk, District R. SB 152 is really a simple act of renaming the Ruby Airport after a great Alaskan, Harold S. Malka.
Period. All right. Now, are there any questions for the sponsor of the legislation? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, what's the will of the committee, Senator Bjorkman?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 152, Work Draft 34-Lima Sierra 0813/N, as in New Nacogdoches, be reported out of committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Great. Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 152, Work Draft 34-LS0813/N is reported from committee with individual recommendations on the attached fiscal note. Thank you, Senator, and thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Senator.
Newly graduated, Paul Menke, everybody. Okay, we're not going to take an at ease. We'll just move directly into the next bill, Senate Bill 104. Senate Bill 104 is Vehicle Boats Transfer on Death Title, sponsored by myself. My staff to the committee, Janet Colquhoun, is here to summarize the legislation for us today. Welcome to the committee.
For the record, Jenna Calhoun, staff to Senator Kawasaki. Senate Bill 104 is continuing the work of the Uniform Real Property Transfer on Death Act, extending TOD deeds for boats and other vehicles that are registered by the DMV. It'll lower the cost of probate for the average Alaskan. It'll clear the probate courts to handle more complicated probate issues, and it'll make this estate planning tool eligible to most Alaskans in the state.
Great. Are there any questions for sponsor of the bill? All right. Hearing and seeing none, we'll go ahead and open up public testimony on Senate Bill 104. Are there any persons in line, online, or in the room who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 104? Great. Hearing and seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony and look to the will of the committee. Senator Bjorkman.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 104, Work Draft 34-Lima Sierra 0617/A as an ANIAC, be reported out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Thank you. Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 104, Work Draft 34-LS0617/A is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note. Thank you. We will go ahead and proceed right into House Bill 121. House Bill 121 is a short title, Accounting, Practice, Privilege, Audit, by Representative Calvin Shragi. Representative Shragi isn't here, but his staff, Amanda Demo, will come up and summarize the legislation for us. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. Chair Kawasaki, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amanda Ndemo. House Bill 121 is updating the Accountancy Act, lowering the credit requirements for accountants, and it will also be updating the requirements for conservatorship as it relates to CPAs.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Debo. Is there any question for the sponsor of the legislation? Okay. Great. Hearing and seeing none, we'll go ahead and open up public testimony. Public testimony is limited to 2 minutes. Is there anybody in the room or online who'd like to testify? We do have one person who's online for questions only, representing the State Board of Accountants. So we have questions. We can direct those to that person. Okay. Hearing and seeing nobody online or in the room who'd like to testify, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Thank everybody for being online, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you for your time.
With public comment closed, are there any final questions from committee members on House Bill 121? Okay, hearing and seeing none, what's the will of the committee? Vice Chair Bjorkman.
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for House Bill 121, Verk Draft 34-Lima Sierra 0382/G, as in Galena, be reported out of committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Just make sure. Okay. Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 121, that is, House Bill 121, Work Draft 34-LS0382/G is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes. We will not take a pause, but we will go ahead and move on next to Senate Bill 166. Oh, no. House Bill 75. House Bill 75 is sponsored by Representative Jeremy Bynum. And Representative Jeremy Bynum is probably attending to Finance Committee duties. So his staff, Trevor Shaw, is here to present the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Trevor Shaw, staff to Representative Jeremy Bynum, House District 1. Before you today is the CS for House Bill 75, House State Affairs, companion legislation to Senate Bill 77, which is sponsored by Senator Keel, which the committee has heard once before. And so just a brief overview of what House Bill 75 does, and I'll also explain the change from the version of SB 77 to HB 75. So we call this the PFD Division Cleanup Bill. It requires the Permanent Fund Division to conduct background checks on and fingerprint its employees and applicants for employment within the division. Modifies the allowable absences for permanent fund dividend eligibility to include absences for school breaks and holidays, not including summer break during the academic year. Education to become a merchant mariner and through other vocational programs approved by the United States Coast Guard. Prevents medical absences from limiting the length of voluntary absences. And changes armed services to uniformed services. And that was a major change between SB 77 and HB 75. Provides the definition for uniformed services to encompass the armed forces and the commissioned corps of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the United States Public Health Service, commissioned corps, and renumbers other provisions of the statute accordingly. Aligns to Section 1 requiring PFD Division to conduct background checks and fingerprints on its employees and applicants, makes the names of PFD applicants confidential, and allows an opt-in option for PFD recipients to receive levy notices electronically. And I also believe there is a letter of intent that we drafted in coordination with your office, Mr. Chairman, and if you would like me to, I can provide a brief explanation on that as well.
Yes, that would be great, okay. Ms. Shaw.
So the letter of intent before you, just a background, AS4323005C, lets a parent, guardian, or other authorized representative file for a permanent fund dividend on behalf of a minor child or disabled adult. The statute requires the child or disabled adult to be eligible in the same manner as other Alaskans. It does not require the sponsor to be eligible for a permanent fund dividend. By regulation in 15 AAC 23.123, the Department of Revenue does not require a disabled adult's sponsor to be eligible for a permanent fund dividend to apply. Despite identical statutory language, the Department of Revenue does require the sponsor of a minor adult to be eligible for a permanent fund dividend in regulation in 15 AAC 23.113. That regulation prohibits minors from receiving a PFD if their sponsor is ineligible. This does create hardship for minors in kinship care whose parents travel for work. The regulation currently provides exceptions for minors whose parents are ineligible because of incarceration, and by repealing or amending this regulation, the department can use the same model for other eligible minors sponsored by ineligible parents or guardians. And that's what would be accomplished in the letter of intent, saying that is the intent of the 34th Alaska State Legislature, that the Department of Revenue repeal or amend that regulation to treat eligible minors equitably with eligible disabled adults by March 31st, 2026, that the department shall report to the presiding officers of each body in the legislature on the regulation changes by March 15th, 2026. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Shaw, are there any questions for sponsor of the bill? Or on the letter of intent that's been added? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, we're going to go ahead and open up public testimony on House Bill 75. We have a couple people who might be online. We have Mr. Rick Berkowitz. Mr. Berkowitz, if you'd like to state your name and your affiliation, and if you can limit public testimony to 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman Kawasaki. My name is Rich Berkowitz. I'm retired from the Transportation Institute. I'd like to provide testimony regarding the merchant mariner allowable absence portion of the bill. The need for this goes back quite some time when we were working with our companies in Alaska who wanted to see more local hire in Alaska of merchant mariners. In 1999, we had legislation that was passed, supported by companies like Crowley, Tote, back then Sealand, Horizon Line. And at that time, there was a vocational training allowable absence currently in the law. Over time, the Department of Revenue, Permanent Fund Dividend Division, decided that they wanted to firm up what was defined as outside vocational training, what was worthwhile training, and they used some definition used by the Alaska Committee on Post-Secondary Education. That definition said that worthy training is anything that is recognized by the Federal Department of Labor, and that definition included that you could obtain a federal student loan for attending the vocational training. Well, that made sense if you charge tuition. What it was set up this particular program was that the companies pay into the union training trust fund, all the education is provided at no cost, women board is provided, pretty much everything but airfare back to the school is provided, and anyone who graduates from the program, which is certified by the Coast Guard, is guaranteed employment. So it was great for local hire. That went on for many years. It was a lot easier to get Alaskan youth interested in the program once you told them that they could get their permanent fund dividend if they went outside for training. The bill that changed, as I mentioned, in past years, this has come up in the last 3 or 4 years. We've been unsuccessful in getting it out of the House, out of the full legislature. Senator Borkman actually sponsored the Senate version of this couple of years ago. In a, 2 years ago, it was part of government's request legislation. So there really isn't any controversy on this. There's both business and labor support it. And it's just that bills on permanent funding end up getting to be Christmas trees, and other issues that get more controversial end up killing the bill and killing this position. So I would urge the committee and the chair to support a clean bill so that we can finally get this done and get back to being able to diligently training and hiring Alaskans for work as merchant mariners, deep sea merchant mariners. Really, there's no one better to be in Alaskan waters but Alaskans. You know, who best to serve the state when it comes to marine commerce and the marine environment. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions at the will of the chair.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Berkowitz. Are there any questions for testifier today? Okay, I don't see any questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Berkowitz. We will now move on to Ralph Mirsky. If you'd state your name and your affiliation for the record, and if you could limit your testimony to 2 minutes. Thank you.
Yes, how do you do? My name is Ralph Mirsky. I'm the executive director of a nonprofit business in Alaska, Sea Link Incorporated. We were based out of Ketchikan for over 22 years, and we still are. We still do recruiting for a different maritime venue. But I, during that time period that we were there recruiting specifically for the Seafarers program, it was phenomenal. I worked through the Department of Labor in Alaska and federal grants, and we placed over 800 people through that program. Now, there was one hurdle. When they decided not to give the permanent fund dividend to those that were attending the training, that was a tough one to overcome, especially with the young people. And out of that whole group, there was 150 fishermen, salmon fishermen, when the salmon industry crashed, that the Seafarers stepped up a special program called specialized training. With a 6-week program, we got a grant for that, and we were able to put any and all of them to work. And a lot of them stayed with it. A lot of them went back to fishing. But there was the permanent fund, the lock there of the permanent dividend fund down the road, kept a lot of them from coming back. So I called to lend my support to the passage. I know how important it is to the folks in Alaska. We've had so many success stories, it's unreal, and they shouldn't be prohibited from getting that permanent fund dividend.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Mirsky. Are there questions?
You're welcome. Any questions?
I don't seem to see any questions here, and so thank you very much for your testimony. Let's see if there's anybody else in the room or online who'd like to testify. Okay. We also do have Director of the Permanent Fund Division, Genevieve Watusik, here for questions online. I don't see – do you have any questions for the Permanent Fund Division at this time? Okay. Well, hearing and seeing none, we'll bring the issue back to the committee. I know Representative Bynum and Senator Keel, the cross-sponsor, is there. Do you have any comments you'd like to make about the bill? You guys got the same haircut. We got a bipartisan bicameral bill here, so it's great to have both of you folks here. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, Jeremy Bynum, House Representative for District 1, and Vice Chair in Committee, really appreciate the opportunity to bring this bill forward in front of the committee. This has been a great learning experience for me. It's been a great opportunity to work with Senator Keel and all the members in the House and in the Senate working through the process of getting this passed on the House side and now through this process on the Senate side. I think that a lot of times we look at bills like this and we think that they make only minor changes in law, but I think this will be significant for the state of Alaska, specifically Southeast Alaska and our maritime industry. It'll also protect our kids going off to school give us an opportunity to modernize the health components in the bill and provide some securities and much-needed cleanup for the division that's been needed for quite a long time. So I just really appreciate the opportunity for the bill to come before you, and I look forward to it continuing through the process. Thank you very much for the for your time.
Thank you, Representative Bynum. Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. A lot of aspects of it I agree with. The one section I have some concern with, and I've heard from constituents about, is Section 5. And I get the policy call. It's about making the name of the permanent fund applicants confidential. And I'm just wondering if there is maybe a different way to do that. I think I've heard from constituents that they will occasionally look somebody up who they don't believe is eligible, and they're able to detect people committing fraud on the permanent fund application process. And I understand also by the same token that the permanent fund division is the subject of hackers and people trying to get information. So I just want to flesh that out a little bit and hear the rationale for that, and maybe if there's some sort of middle ground that could be reached that could provide people with some assurance that there's not rampant permanent fund PFD fraud going on.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Wilikowski, for the question. You know, we always struggle to strike that balance between open transparency about people that are eligible and using state resources through this program and security of those that are using those resources. And I think the intention from the division and from our office is to ensure that we're protecting our citizens from those potential fraudulent events that can occur. And we've known that those types of events are more prevalent, especially as we move more into a digital time. I'm also assured that if we do suspect that there's fraud, that the provisions in this bill don't prevent that those investigations from occurring or happening. And I would like to know, you know, it would be nice to be able to see if we could find an alternative that strikes the balance that you're trying to look for. But I'm comfortable with the language that we have there, because I know that it doesn't prohibit those opportunities for investigation when we suspect fraud. I think when a member of the public has a concern that somebody is maybe abusing the program, that we have available channels for them to go through, even with this provision being put in place, that they could still put a request in. And if it's found to be valid, that the department would follow up on that.
Senator Wilikowski, did you have a follow-up? Or we do have the director from the Permit Fund Division. Maybe you can ask.
Yeah.
Senator Wilikowski.
I'd be curious from the Permanent Fund Division perspective why they feel this section is necessary.
Ms. Watusik, Director of the Permanent
Fund. For the record, Deputy Watusik, PFD Director. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, thank you for the question. It's a great question, and it's one that we've worked on for the past couple of years. And with in coordination with the Criminal Investigation Unit, the CIU, and our risk manager, we just believe it's an unnecessary risk to have Alaskans' data easily accessible online to show that they applied for the PFD. We believe it creates way more issues than help. And that's why we believe that it's an important piece to keep confidential, or to make confidential.
Senator Wilikowski, follow up.
I know this has been the subject of legislation in the past, because I have not supported it in the past also. And I think in the past it's been much more expansive. I think in the past it's been including addresses, for example, and I believe. And that is no longer the case. There's so much public information out there, though, like people's property tax records. You can go online and look up and see who owns property. I mean, there's so much information that's out there, and this is just the name. And granted, a name like mine would stick out and be easily detectable, whereas like a John Smith would, you know, there's probably 50 of them. But it just seems like it provides some level of comfort to some people that somebody's looking out. And I know when I go door to door in my district, literally a quarter of the houses I knock on don't live there. And I think there's many, many, many people who are living out of state or collecting a permanent fund dividend check. And I think that frustrates Alaskans. And this seems to be like the last area that Alaskans can go to provide some level of protection for their permanent fund.
There is another question from Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you very much, Chair Kawasaki. Again, for the Permanent Fund Division Director. Madam Director, we've seen iterations of this bill in previous legislatures. The version last year, did it include this provision as well?
Through the Chair, Senator Bjorkman, Genevieve Watusik again. Yes, it did. It was an amended version. It was a friendly amendment, though, that included it. It did have this same language of making the name list confidential, and it has always just been the name. There has never been – the address list has never been public. What may have been thought of is the RPFI system, which is the Revenue Permanent Fund Information List. That's what government agencies use. That's still – applicable to government agencies. This is just taking it off of offline, not available to the general public. And any Alaskan can as well submit a fraud tip to the Criminal Investigation Unit.
Senator Bjorkman, Senator Wilikowski?
I mean, voter lists are public, right? And that you can get a person's address. And yeah, I just sort of wrestle with the notion that there's so much information out there that's public right now. Election information is public. Property tax information is public. And I just, I just wrestle with it, excluding this one particular thing.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. I actually hadn't really noticed this one part in Section 5 myself. I guess... How frequently does the Criminal Investigation Unit get these sort of random requests that maybe somebody might be getting a PFD who hasn't or doesn't deserve a PFD? Is that something that's frequent, something that you keep track of, Director?
Chair Kawasaki, yes, it is. They receive hundreds of fraud tips that they have to review and analyze and investigate.
And then just to follow up on that, is it normally from a credible person, or is there somebody that says, I saw that this person claims a PFD, but then I know that this person no longer lives in the state? Or is it some other driver to that investigation?
Chairman, I believe it can be a number of those, and it can be anonymous as well. You don't have to say who you are when you're giving this fraud tip. I can follow up with the investigations manager and follow and send something in writing if you would like some more information on the generality of the fraud tips, if that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think thank you, Director. I think that would be helpful. I think it'd be also helpful, like I haven't spent any time on Google to figure out exactly where this is, but where is this? So there's at least somewhere that there is a public list of the names of the people who are permanent fund recipients currently?
Chairman Kawasaki, in regulations this past year, about a year and a half ago, we did change it. There was a list that you could export to have an Excel list of everyone. Now you can just do a name search. It is on the PFD website. But through regulations, we did take the Excel format off of it. You may still request it in writing to have it be printed and mailed, but the actual Excel list is no longer on the website.
Interesting. Thank you very much, Director, for that explanation. Are there any other questions for the Director, for the sponsor of the legislation, or for the cross-sponsor?
I have a question.
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Director. If that is the nature of the list, that someone has to search for a specific name in order to find it, what kind of risk profile are we looking at here that that tool would expose people to?
Senator Bjorkheim, through the chair, great question. So taking the whole list offline was one tool we were able to do through regulation. This is the statutory fix to it. But what someone could do and is still allowed to do is pay for the printing and mailing of the entirety of the list. And then through there, they could have nefarious actions. I wouldn't want to speculate or put those types of things on the record. But our risk manager has said that there are, you know, many options that that nefarious person could go down, and we're trying to prevent that in any way possible. But they could also just do a name search and then look at death records and, you know, apply on behalf of that estate. There's just a number of ways that we believe they could be acting nefariously that we are trying to prevent.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I wanted to note for the record that Senator L.B. Gray Jackson's been with us for several hours, minutes?
About
6 minutes. 6 minutes. For the last 6 minutes, we thank her for being here. Let's see, are there any other questions for the sponsor of the legislation? I guess I kind of have a concern about just the Section 5 now that it was brought up. I hadn't noticed it before, but anybody else have any major concerns or comments they'd like to make? Senator Wilkowski?
I know people want to pass this bill, and I don't want to hold it up, but I think my preference would probably be to remove Section 5, Mr. President, Mr. Chair.
Well, why don't we just take a brief at ease? Okay, we had a brief at ease at which we had a little discussion. Senator Wilkowski?
Mr. Chairman, this seems to be an ancillary part. It doesn't seem to be the fundamental reason for this bill, Section 5, that is, the confidentiality provision. I'd like a little bit more time to maybe study that through a separate bill. So I don't want to hold up the rest of the bill, but if you're open to amendments, Mr. Chairman, I would...
Sure. We will take an amendment. Senator Wilkowski.
I'll make a conceptual amendment, number one, that we remove Section 5, which is page 6 of the version I document, line 28 through page 7, line 13.
And I'll object briefly so everybody can see where they're at, and then... on the record, if we can have a comment from the sponsor of the legislation, Representative Bynum.
Yes, thank you, Chair Kawasaki. Jeremy Bynum, representative for House District 1. It seems like a reasonable request that we'd have more time to look at that in the future. I appreciate the opportunity to have that removed from the bill so that the bill can continue through its process and we can get all of the other good things in this bill passed forward. So I talked with the cross-sponsor the bill, and we have no objection to removing Section 5.
Thank you, Representative Bynum. Are there any other questions or comments? I'll go ahead and remove my objection to conceptual amendment number one. Are there any other objections? Hearing and seeing none, conceptual amendment number one has passed the committee. With that one change, are there any other questions or comments folks would like to make about Senate or House Bill 75? Okay, hearing and seeing none, what's the will of the committee? Senator Bjorkman.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for HB 75 work draft 34-LS0475/N, as in. Mr. Chair.
Senator Bjorkman.
I move CS for HB 75 work draft 34-LS0475/I, as in Iditarod, be reported out of committee as amended with individual recommendations, the letter of intent, and attached zero fiscal note. I authorize Legal Legal to have the authority to make technical and conforming changes.
Thank you. Senator Bjorkman, are there any objections? Thank you. Hearing and seeing none, that is committee substitute for House Bill 75, work draft 34-LS0475/I, as amended, is reported out of committee with individual recommendations, the letter of intent, the attached zero fiscal note. Legislative Legal has the authority to make any technical or conforming changes. We'll go ahead and take a brief at ease to queue up the next bill. Okay, I'd like to call the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting back to order. We have next up Senate Bill 166. Senate Bill 166 is short title, Notice Requirements for State Actions, sponsored by the Rules Committee at the request of the governor. Today we have Jason Olds, the director of the Division of Air Quality from the Department of Environmental Conservation, who can present. We also have Brandon McCutcheon, Division of Mining, Land, and Water for the Department of Natural Resources. He is online for questions if folks do have questions. We'll go ahead and start with presentation of the bill by Director Olds. Welcome to the Senate State Affairs Committee.
Thank you. For the record, Jason Olds, Director of Air Quality for the Department of Environmental Conservation. Through the Chair, Chair Kawasaki, and members of the State Affairs Committee, I appreciate the opportunity to appear for you today and present Senate Bill 166. On behalf of Senate Rules by request of the governor. This bill is closely modeled after legislation passed by the Senate during the 33rd legislature, which unfortunately expired on the House floor before adjournment on day 121 of last year. Like its predecessor, SB 166 seeks to update and modernize longstanding public notice practices used by the Department of Environmental Conservation and Natural Resources. The state is trying to meet people where they're at effectively and without driving up the costs for business. In the year, we've seen notable print circulation reduced to select days of the week. Also worth noting that the state's largest newspaper's readership is 90% online. The bill retains flexibility for print where appropriate without strictly requiring it. SB 166 would amend public notice requirements for several state actions, including those tied to land use, water use, and regulatory processes governed by the Administrative Procedures Act. This bill does not alter the substance of any permitting or regulatory process, It simply allows state agencies to fulfill those notice requirements through the Alaska Online Public Notice System, with the option rather than the requirement to use newspaper advertisements. This bill also removes mandates for multiple print publications for geographically targeted newspaper ads, allowing agencies to assess when additional advertising is warranted. SB 166 seeks to reduce agency and private business costs and modernize the state's current system to align with trends in public engagement. So the pricing for newspapers can range anywhere from $500 to $1,500. This depends on the length of the publication and the individual newspaper. These costs are passed on to permit applicants in most cases where it can slow down routine permitting because of scheduling conflicts with those reduced days. SB 166 helps agencies direct limited resources more efficiently. So if there's any additional time or otherwise, I'm happy to read through a sectional analysis for the bill, if that's the will of the chair. And if there's any questions, I'm happy to take those as well.
Great. Any questions for Director Olds at this time? Great. Hearing and seeing none, if you'd like to go through the sectional analysis, love to hear it.
All right, so Section 1, this section updates how the Department of Natural Resources gives early public notice when it's planning to lease land for recreational development, like campgrounds or public use cabins. Section 2, once DNR is ready to move forward with leasing land for recreational purposes, this section governs how they notify the public and interested parties. It requires all requests for proposals to be posted on the online public notice system. Section 3 affects how DNR announces the issuance of mineral leases after a claim has been recorded. Section 4 applies to a variety of DNR land decisions that require public notice, such as preliminary findings or other land use authorizations. Section 5 adds land and environmental notices under Titles 38 and 46 to the list of required items that must be posted on the Alaska Online Public Notice System. Section 6 updates how agencies notify the public when proposing new regulations or amendments. Section 7 is a cleanup section that modernizes expectations around notice formatting. It acknowledges that digital communications don't require a formal printed title, and that's in quotations. When agencies incorporate outside documents like federal manuals into regulations, those documents change. The public must be notified. The section modernizes how updates are shared. That's Section 8. Section 9 helps protect agencies from lawsuits based on small technical mistakes in public notices, like an unclear subject line or missing formatting. Section 10 affects how the Department of Environmental Conservation issues public notices for waste disposal permits. Section 11 applies when DEC reviews and verifies existing water rights in a given area. It updates the required notice process to include the online public notice system as the primary platform. And then Section 12 modernizes notice procedures when an agency proposes to use or sell water resources. And I think that's the concluding section.
Thank you, Director Olds. Are there any questions for the sponsor's designee today? I guess one of the questions or comments that I've always heard is just that not – while it, I think you said 90% do read newspapers online, there are a significant amount that don't. The Section 6 of the bill offers some discretion to the commissioner. I'm just curious what things might be, how that decision will be made about whether to use the online publication notice system versus a newspaper in that particular area.
Absolutely, Chair Kawasaki. So speaking for myself as a division director, I would, you know, seek to recommend for any use if it's a sort of rural area or populations on any contentious issue. Anything where we're trying to get that engagement and ensure that we're effectively reaching the population would be my recommendation. Our sort of Fairbanks SIPs regarding PM2.5, those are federally required, but certainly those would be absolutely appropriate instances to ensure that we're getting that broad reach. You know, as to what someone might recommend for DNR, if there's any questions, I don't have a great example offhand, but certainly, you know, I think if it's contentious or geographically relevant or areas that are underserved by bandwidth or other sort of internet resources, those are all appropriate instances to move to print, in my opinion.
Thank you, Director Olds. Air quality, not at all controversial, but thank you for that explanation. I'll just, again, sort of a fear might be from that you wouldn't want to have a lot of that, the most controversial stuff published so broadly on newsprint versus, you know, just on the online, because there are people that don't use the online system. So my mom, for instance, does not use the online system. And I guess, just a concern. Any other questions for Director Olds at this time? Senator Wilikowski.
I'm just curious, do you know what percentage of Alaskans would have access to this system in their houses? I know a lot of people have cell phones. Do you have any data on that, any sort of sense?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't have data on, you know, accessibility for folks. I know it is available through cell phones. I pulled it up as far as looking and finding. So speaking anecdotally, it's, you know, I think times have certainly improved access to those resources and things. That family in Yakutat is just an example. Since here 10 years ago today, those resources are more broadly available, but I don't have a number for you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Director, and thank you, Mr. McCutcheon, for being online. I don't think there's any questions. We'll go ahead and open up public testimony on Senate Bill 166. Is there anybody in the room or online who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 166? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, we will keep public testimony open for Senate Bill 166. If folks would like to send in testimony via email, the best way to do that would be to the State Affairs Committee. That is senatestateaffairs@akleg.gov, senatestateaffairs@akleg.gov. It will be scanned and processed and put into the permanent record that will be online under the Documents tab, and we'll try and do that within the week if you would send an email. We will... At this point, we're going to go ahead and set Senate Bill 166 aside. Thank Mr. Olds for being here. Thank you, Mr. McCutcheon, for being online. And now we will take a brief at ease. All right. Next up, we have Senate Bill 177. Senate Bill 177 was a bill sponsored by the Rules Committee by request of the governor, the short title of which is the Act Relating to Elimination or Modification of State Agency Publications that are outdated, duplicative, or excessive. We have reached out to the governor's office because the governor's office at some point had previously said that they'd like their bills heard, and we agree. We are trying to hear all the bills that come to this committee, and we've done so. Senator Bjorkman, Vice Chair, and I have done so. We are hearing this bill today without the governor being here. That's fine. But I did want to say that Senate Bill 177 had its genesis from a prior year. It was a bill that was sponsored and passed just 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And it was House Bill 187. It was sponsored by Representative Kaufman, who is now a current senator. It's sponsored by half a dozen members of the House and the Senate. It passed 35-0 and 18-0 in the Senate. That was back in 2022. The purpose of the bill is to eliminate or modify these publications that are outdated or duplicative and try to save money, similarly to Senate Bill 166 that we just heard. The governor has chosen not to send anybody to support Senate Bill 177 or promote it. And we have, again, put into the record the letter from the governor's office or from Department of Law and just talking about not being available to hear this. I know that then Representative Kaufman, now Senator Kaufman, is planning on reintroducing legislation specifically to do this for outdated or duplicative publications that are done currently within state law. I supported this bill. I think everybody who was on this committee, or I'm sorry, everybody who was a legislator in 2022 voted in affirmative for the bill. Again, we're trying to save money. If there's state agency publications that are costing the state of Alaska money, either production, staff time, public employee time, whatever it takes, I think we need to find those efficiencies, and I support Senator Kaufman's bill. I support his endeavor to do so. I wish that the governor's office were here to maybe address the situation with this particular bill. Are there any questions for Senator Wilikowski?
Chairman, did we get a fiscal note with this? I would imagine this is probably going to save quite a bit of money for the state.
Well, we have not received a fiscal note from the agencies. Of course, every agency, the 13 principal division, or I'm sorry, the 13 principal, 14 now principal agencies, along with sub agencies and divisions, all publish these reports at a quite an expensive cost to the state. I'm not exactly sure what that fiscal note is, but it's probably pretty hefty. And again, the legislature had directed the administration to come up with this, and the administration had come up with this bill, Senate Bill 177, that we're hearing today. We can try and encourage maybe the governor's office and the Office of Management and Budget and to provide us with sort of the fiscal impact. But I think there's certainly savings to be had if they're eliminating some of these publications that might be outdated or even duplicative. We don't want them to do more work than is necessary, but certainly if there's reports that are not being utilized or not useful, seems like something that's a good way to start saving money. Are there any other comments to make, Senator Wilikowski?
Well, I would just note that on page 8 and 9 of the bill, section 16, it looks like there's about 42 sections of law that are repealed. And I would at some point be curious what those sections are. And I mean, we directed the administration to, according to the note that was sent to us, to review and streamline reporting requirements. And Well, let's see. It's the bill was submitted to comply with the statutory mandate that every state agency identify outdated, duplicative, or excessive publications required by law. So I'm assuming those 42 sections are things that they believe are outdated, duplicative, or excessive. But we don't know that for sure.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. There's nobody here to present their own bill, so I guess it's sort of speculation. I'd love to look into each of these individual sections and decide whether they are duplication or whether they're not duplication, but absent a commissioner or two or an agency who is involved in the production of those particular reports, I'm not really sure how we would know what we're looking at. So I don't know how to answer that question. Are there any other questions for for anybody that's sitting here today? Senator Wilkowski.
Is there anybody online, Mr. Chairman, from the governor's office?
There's nobody from the governor's office at this time, and I don't know. Maybe they had been online but have since then gone. The former folks that were here just talking about making it more efficient for us on online public notices and just left. They are not sponsors of Senate Bill 177, and so they've left. So I don't know that there's anybody in the administration to currently ask. Senator Wilkowski.
Chairman, this just to be sure that this meeting was properly noticed and the governor's office was aware that this meeting was occurring.
Yes, Senator Wilkowski, this was properly noticed. We did receive word from Department of Law. Department of Law did send a letter earlier this week. I believe it came on Tuesday at 10 o'clock, responding to the request, knowing that this was going to be one of the bills that was heard. We calendared the bill prior to Thursday of the prior week. It was public by Thursday at 4 p.m. The response is written. The response will also be online under Senate Bill 177. Any other comments or questions to make at this point in time before we gavel out of this committee? All right. Well, we will go ahead and set Senate Bill 177 aside for a future hearing, but we will go ahead and now adjourn the meeting. This does conclude the meeting for today, but we will not have a meeting on Saturday if we had calendared it earlier. I don't know. We will have we do have a scheduled meeting for Tuesday of next week. That's May 13th. We will have a scheduled meeting for the 15th, and we will have a scheduled meeting for the 17th. We don't anticipate to have any bills heard, but we have calendared bills previously heard or scheduled, and so we will talk to folks who've had those bills. We also might get bills from that have crossed over from the other body at that time. Any other comments or questions about the committee today? Great. Hearing and seeing none, we will go ahead and gavel the meeting out. Adjourn the meeting. The time now is 4:32 p.m.